time to follow the money with your hosts, Mitch Moss and Polly Howard.
Thanks for checking in, Mitch and Polly, here on a Thursday. We'll talk to friend of the show, longtime film critic Richard Roper, Chicago Sun-Times, coming up in 5 minutes. He's working on he's going to start a new podcast coming up tomorrow. Best war movies last 75 years, actually, is what he's working on. That's a tough list. I know who's number one for me. You can't touch number one. What was that about? You don't like it? You don't like a lot of war movies? Is that what you're saying?
No. Great. It's a good list. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Love Full Metal Jacket, too. Boy,
right,
what a movie
like
that is.
One.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. We got on this earlier. The response has been incredible. Thank you very much, as always, just like yesterday. You guys are fantastic. FTM at VSiN.com and also on Twitter. Good or bad celebrity encounters, or also something that was harmless, just a random sighting. Jim O, Blackjack, High Limit, Bellagio. Tom Cruise comes in. Plays five hands, 5,000 each, lost every hand and left. Very polite. Also, Martin Sheen at LAX shared a cab with him. Great guy, enjoyed the conversation. He even paid. The guy was playing craps with Kenny Rogers. Matt Devine, Bradley Whitford sitting alone. He hung out with him. Where was this other one? Oh, I was 8 years old. This is from Andrew. I was 8 years old. I ran to the Lakers at the airport. I asked Kareem for an autograph. Said, no, son, too busy. Maybe next time. Geez, that's a bad beat. Another guy at Del Mar, sitting by Halle Berry and David Justice in the good old days. AJ Pierzynski in the Orlando airport from Troy, 2006. I was even wearing my White Sox World Champions T-shirt. He gave me the head nod, but didn't want anything to do with anybody. He sat in coach, and he didn't say anything. That's from Troy. And they keep some fantastic emails we can share. They're coming in fast and furious. And even Phoebe Cates at a Minneapolis Skyway. Phoebe Cates, remember that from Patrick in the late 80s. Looked good. Nice. Was a very nice person, too, from Patrick.
Well,
FTM at Visa.com.
I mean, we were really young when Fast Times came out. But how many times, like I have two older brothers, how many times they watched that scene in Fast Times where she's coming out of the pool? Oh, my God. Come on. Did you talk about the one with Tom Cruise?
Yeah, Blackjack, yeah.
Okay, yeah, sorry, I missed that one. That's a lost off plane 5,000. Okay, see you guys later. He was totally okay with everything.
Boog Powell, you can email us. Camden Yards. There was another one. Boog Powell, Camden Yards, asked him about Koufax. Boog said, I hit a home run off him, went 2 for 3. No big deal. Paul O'Reilly, Sean Burke. She used to play goalie. How funny is that? Sean Burke was a goalie in the NHL years ago. Picked him up as an Uber driver. So these are all over the place. Dave Cowens, charity basketball game. And the guy was playing like it was game 7 in the charity basketball game. That's from Jimmy. Very good interaction.
You can email the show. It's FTM at vsin.com. FTM for follow the money. At vsin.com. We're also on Twitter. It's at vsin live, Mitch Moss Radio, at Pauly Howard. This, again, is Follow the Money on vsin, the Sports Betting Network. Joined now by friend of the show, longtime film critic for the Chicago Sun-Times, Richard Roper, is on the horn with us. Richard, do you remember, before you got into this business, because you and by the way, you probably, since you've been doing this, you've had some weird celebrity encounters, right? But when you were younger, like the first time that you ever saw a celebrity and you're like, I can't believe it. And then just how did it go? And did you have any weird interactions when you were young?
I don't think I had any weird interactions. But yeah, before I got into any kind of media stuff, just like everybody else, the coolest thing, I'll tell you guys a little inside story. Way back in the day, I was at a White Sox Yankees game with my big brother, who was a little bit of a troublemaker. And he was in photography, so he had a nice camera. He jumped over the railing and started taking pictures of Reggie Jackson as he was warming up in right field. And this was, you know, in the 70s, so the security wasn't, nobody said anything. And Reggie just kept playing. And after a while, he just said, hey, kid, you should go back in the stands. And he tossed him a baseball. He didn't call security. He didn't say, get the hell off the field. He just kept playing catch. Yeah, no. So that was a good one.
So the thing about you is, I would be imagine the how would be a great compliment if someone, a celebrity, would reach out to you or send you a note about, hey, thanks for that nice review you gave. I'm sure that happened all the time.
Yeah, I'll send you guys this. You can put it up on the website. I was on a show years ago talking about the best sports movies, and I mentioned Rocky. And Sylvester Stallone sent me a handwritten note. Hey, I was watching you on TV, and you mentioned Rocky as the best sports movie of all time. We have the same best favorite sports movie in common. It's my favorite sports movie, too. Mm.
Well, I mean, because you have told us about your not only do you think that's one of the best sports movie of all time, I think you've said before that it might be your favorite movie of all time. So to actually get a response like that from Stallone is incredible. I mean, come on, that can't be topped.
That was pretty awesome. I'll tell you guys another quick random celebrity encounter. I'm on a flight with my girlfriend coming back from LA to Chicago, and we didn't have our seats together, right? And you know, you always go to somebody and say, hey, do you mind switching seats so I can sit with my girlfriend? And this woman goes, I already switched once. I'm not switching again. So she doesn't switch. So my girlfriend's now sitting right behind me, right? And who comes and walks and sits in the seat next to her? Channing Tatum.
Good luck with that.
So the funny part is this I was dating a girl. She was not from America. She was not a huge movie fan. She barely knew who it was. But the woman who was next to me, the crab ass who didn't switch seats, could have had 5 hours next to Channing Tatum, who, by the way, curled up and said, you know, I said hello to him. He's very, very nice guy. And he's a big guy, you know, and he curled up. He goes, I hope you don't mind. I might have to use your girlfriend's shoulder as a pillow, as he was sleeping for the whole flight while the woman next to me, the crab ass who wouldn't switch seats, had to be next to me. Sorry, lady.
Yeah.
It's all right.
Okay. Indeed. Now that it's all wrapped up, and we had the Game 6 movie last night. You had a very long review of that in the Chicago Sun-Times. Did you have any? I mean, what was your biggest issue? I think the most feedback that I've seen from people watching The Last Dance, they said, "I just wish MJ did not have the final say in everything." Did you feel the same way?
Well, you know, this is the great thing about what you guys do and what I do and what the media does, you know, the sports media in general, is he has the final word in everything in The Last Dance. But Horace Grant can come forward and say he's a snitch. Other players can say, I don't remember it that way. You know, people get a chance to respond to things in this day and age. I didn't have a problem with that because it was framed from the very, you know, the opening frame of The Last Dance was that shot of MJ from behind, I think in his Florida home, and it kind of ended with a similar one. They made it very clear from the outcome, or from the outset through the outcome, this was going to be about Michael Jordan and the 1990s Chicago Bulls, just because they're not stupid ESPN guys. That's what people wanted to see. I didn't have a problem with that. Listen, I know some people that were interviewed for that documentary. Most of them were not interviewed once. They were interviewed 3 or 4 times. So the editing is one thing, but you know, Scottie Pippen, who I know got a lot of, you know, rough bumps in there, he had a chance to say he would do it differently and not sit on the bench for the 1.8 seconds. Everybody had a chance to say what they were going to say. Michael Jordan dominated the conversation because he dominated the league and he dominated the globe in the 90s.
How do you have, I can't have sympathy for Pippen. He did it to himself. If he had to do it all over again, I wouldn't change a thing. He sits on the bench in the Ku Klux game. And then he starts early on by saying, well, I got surgery because I didn't want to bleep up my summer. And then Jordan called him selfish, which is okay in my eyes because he decided to, you know, have the surgery, not in the summer, but while the season was starting. So that was on him, too. And the other thing about Horace Grant, it's just a lot of people have said this, and we can ask you, Richard, that he just it was Jordan's team and then it was Pippen and he didn't get a lot of credit. So it seems like Horace Grant had an ego thing about not get enough credit for what happened.
You know, we talk so often about big threes like McHale and Bird and Parrish. And trios like that, the big three down at the Miami Heat. Before that, Horace Grant wanted it to be the big three. He wanted it to be Jordan, Pippen, and Grant. But Horace wasn't quite at that level. I think he made one all-star team, guys. He was just beneath that level of an all-star. Uh-huh. You know, he was very solid. And you know what? Chicagoans loved him. He's a good guy. I saw him just last year at a charity tournament. He couldn't have been nicer to fans. And everybody really did love him. He just, you know, listen, it was Batman and Robin. And then, you know, who else is working in Wayne Manor, basically. That's the way it was.
So coming up next now on ESPN, of course, we know about the three other sports documentaries they're doing. One's going to be on Bruce Lee, which I think could be really good. The Summer of 98 with McGuire and Sosa. And Lance Armstrong, which you've had a chance to watch. And this is going to be a two-part series the way it looks. I got to tell you, I think I mentioned this to you on the air before. I don't really have any interest in watching a show about Lance Armstrong. I don't really care about that guy. He doesn't come across as a good guy. Am I wrong in that?
No. You're not wrong. Even though it's a very solid documentary, I'm hearing that, guys, from so many people. Here's what ESPN's doing. In the time slot that The Last Dance ran for the last five Sundays, they're going to run this two-parter on Lance Armstrong. So it's a total of about 3 hours. It's a deep dive. And yes, he cooperates. He's in it at the very beginning, just like Michael Jordan. And it's really well done, and it certainly doesn't pull any punches. But I do believe that people know this story very, very well now. And you make a great point. Lance Armstrong is his own worst enemy. You know, Michael Jordan, yes, Michael can be arrogant. Yes, Michael can be a bully. But Michael Jordan has a world of charisma and can be a beautiful person. Great with kids all through his career. You know, he's someone you kind of want to be around. Lance Armstrong has that type A personality. And he even says it. You know, he knows that, you know, people have very polarizing opinions about him. But he comes across as somebody, when he says he's sorry, I don't believe him. He said, you know, when he says, at one point they ask him, well, do you want to become relevant again? He's like, I am relevant right now. I don't need to become relevant again. And what we do learn, I found fascinating in this documentary, is he was like that when he was 17. People talk about when he first came up in the cycling scene, what a bully he was, how he manipulated teammates, how rude he was to people. And, you know, you give him a little bit of sympathy because he grew up in a very hard upbringing. His mom was only 17 when she had him. Father was out of the picture. The stepfather, who's in the documentary, admits that he was not a loving stepfather. You know, pretty rough upbringings, but he didn't grow. He's 48 years old now, and he still reminds you of that one jerky dad that, you know, you go to your kid's school and there's that one dad that's always talking about the size of his car and what he did when he was a kid and how he's cooler than everybody else. And you just go, oh, this guy, stay away from Lance.
Yep. Did you like, Did you like Blackballed? There was another, this just came out as well about Donald Sterling. Doc Rivers had to convince, and it took a lot of time and effort for him to sign J.J. Redick because Sterling didn't like white players.
Yeah, and if people don't know about Quibi, it's Q-U-I-B-I. It's free for a couple of months. You get it on your iPhone or your whatever other smartphone you have. That's how you can watch this documentary. Guys, I was so impressed by Doc Rivers and Chris Paul in this documentary. It's all about the Donald Sterling controversy and madness in 2014 when it was caught on tape saying these horrible racist things. And if people don't remember, Clippers had it was probably the best Clippers team to that point they had in their history. Mm-hmm. They had a chance to make a deep run in the playoffs. And in the middle of the playoffs, people are saying, well, you guys shouldn't play because your owner's racist. You should boycott the league. And that's a tough place, you know, especially that was a young team, for these young guys to be put in this position. And one of the cool things about Blackball, the documentary, is LeBron James stepped up too and said, listen, if those guys walk out, I'm walking out. You're not going to have any playoffs. And I give Silver, the commissioner, who had just become the commissioner, a world of credit. He could have said, let's just suspend him. Let's just look through this thing. Let's figure this out. He was like, no, you're gone from the league and you're going to have to sell that team.
And this is only like, they only do like 10-minute documentaries, right, on Quibi? Yeah.
Well, it's awesome. A series of 10-minute segments, so it's about an hour altogether. It's really well done. Okay. People should check it out.
Okay.
Yeah, check it out.
You did a great job covering The Last Dance with the podcast, Chicago Six Times. And now you're starting another podcast tomorrow. This should be fascinating. I mean, who doesn't love a good war movie, right? And you're going to do a podcast on the best war movies of the past 75 years?
Yeah, 75 years since World War II, so that we're relegating it to that. You know, there's another podcast down the road where we can talk about Civil War movies and World War I movies. But these are all movies, guys, from 1946 forward. And there are so many great movies. And I thought for Memorial Day in particular, it'd be a great way to pay tribute to the tens and hundreds of thousands of men and women who have devoted their lives and in many cases lost their lives so that you and I have the privilege and the freedoms to do what we're doing right now, guys.
It's a great list. Saving Private Ryan, Full Metal Jacket, the dialogue early on in that movie, incredible. Oh. Pyle, and like Mitch said, it's two movies in one. Platoon's phenomenal. I love The Deer Hunter. That's a long movie, but The Deer Hunter's, that's a great cast too, Richard.
Yeah, and you mentioned a couple of ones. Deer Hunter, first of all, it's like three movies because it's The Wedding Reception, then Vietnam, then they're back home. And, you know, the fascinating thing about Full Metal Jacket, the great, great film from Stanley Kubrick, R. Lee Ermey, you know, who plays the gunnery sergeant, who was so amazing in there, he was hired as a technical advisor on Apocalypse Now, because he actually was a Marine drill sergeant. And Coppola said to Kubrick, you should use him as a technical advisor. And he was so good just talking to Stanley Kubrick that the actual guy who was cast in the role, after a week, they replaced him with R. Lee Ermey to play the role itself.
Wow.
You know, with Saving Private, yeah, he hit it out of the park, obviously, one of the best roles of all time. And I'll never forget, Richard, I mean, some movie experiences that will never leave my memory, right? And one of those would be Saving Private Ryan, when I went, first of all, for the first 25 minutes in a packed theater to watch that unfold. If your jaw's not on the ground in the first 25 minutes, I don't know what to tell you. And then walking out of the theater that day, like these grizzled gray beard veterans with tears running down their faces, and it was dead silent walking out of the theater. I will never, ever forget that.
You know, that's a great, great story. And so true. Those that first 25 minutes, there had been some violent war movies, nothing like we saw in that initial Normandy Beach sequence, where I think it really brought home to people that these young men who stormed the beach there and, you know, saved our country, Omaha Beach, they're 19, 20. And then sometimes they were older. As the war went on, you got guys who were Tom Hanks's age, you know, guys in their 30s and 40s joining the war effort. And the vast majority of them were not career soldiers. They were teachers and construction workers and bus drivers and police officers who joined the war and then had to, you know, sacrifice everything. And that was the glory and the beauty of that movie. And then at the end, when Tom Hanks says to the Matt Damon character, to Private Ryan, earn this, earn all the efforts that we made to bring you home. And doesn't, I mean, it just gives you chills just thinking about it, guys.
Yeah. When he said that, when he whispered it as he's dying to Matt Damon, earn this. It's just, it's incredible. Yep. So how do people find the podcast that's going to debut tomorrow then? What do they search?
All you got to do is just Google Roper and podcast. It's on Apple Podcasts. It's on all the, you know, networks that have podcasts. So the easiest way, just Google Richard Roper and podcast, and you'll get it. It's called The Best Movies Memorial Day Special.
Excellent. You're the best. Thanks so much for the time.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
Yep. Take care.
They put Game 6 on the ESPN, the movie, yesterday. Re-showed the highest-rated game in NBA history. And Jordan has 45 of the 87. It's just ridiculous. Ridiculous. And like Bob Costa says, the finish is one of the best you're ever going to see by an athlete, where he scores, steals the ball, hits the jumper, game winner, and they win the title again. I forgot that they were up 3-1 and couldn't close them out at home. I mean, there was a couple of times. It happened against Phoenix in 93. Where the Bulls had an opportunity to eliminate the teams at home, and they couldn't do it, and had to go back on the road and clean house and get that done. But and also the other thing, watching the pizza game, the flu game, boy, the Jazz let one get away. I mean, they were up 16 in the second quarter in that game in 97.
Yeah, had a huge lead.
In pivotal, it's 36-20, and Jordan's got the flu or food poisoning, whatever you want to call it. I mean, the guy is still in bed at 5 o'clock, and the game's at 7. And the Jazz couldn't hang on to a 16-point lead, and Jordan wins that game, too, as he goes for 38 and 44 minutes, Superman. Oh, you forget about some of this stuff.
Yeah, think about that, Paul. I'm more impressed by the 44 minutes than the 38 points in his condition at that point. And as I said on Monday, to relive this whole thing in, you know, 5 weeks, so many teams had so many chances to actually dethrone the Chicago Bulls. In the Eastern Conference alone, the Knicks took him to a 7th game, they had their chances. Obviously, the Pacers did with that 3-point lead going to the jump ball with about 6 minutes to go in Chicago in Game 7. In the Western Conference, going again, the Suns were right there. That was going to go to a Game 7, and they totally blew it, and they left Paxson open. He hit the big shot. And the Jazz in both series. And in 98, and how do you score 54 points in any NBA game?
I know.
NBA
I
Finals
know. Yeah.
game. They will never live that down. I don't care. It's just, that's embarrassing to this day.
The Phoenix is up 4 with 40 seconds and the ball, and they blow it. Horrendous defense by the Suns on the Paxson 3-2. It's been said by many. But the other thing, and Phil talks about it before the game, the series, is like, hey, the Jazz like to get up and run. I mean, they might be able to, it was a big thing to score 100 points in a game back then, because the Jazz were number one in scoring. They might get 100, yeah, but...
Isn't that funny?
Yep.
Because I actually laughed watching the docuseries, and Phil's like, fellas, they can score.
Yeah.
They like to get up and down the court. Like they might score in triple digits. I'm just like, and then every game goes under but one, and the other one was a push. So five unders in the series. And if you compare that now to basketball for the last, 5-6 years, if you don't score 100, there's something wrong with your team. Follow the Money here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Mitch Moss, Paulie Howard. Tremendous reaction on the celebrity encounters. FTM at VSiN.com is the email. We'll go over some of those. And we'll talk about the NHL's latest scenario with Dennis Bernstein coming up as well. Follow the Money here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. We were talking about just, you know, random celebrity sightings or encounters that you've had in your life a little bit earlier in the program. We've had some bizarre ones. And I said, like, if you live in a spot like Las Vegas or certainly Los Angeles, you know what we're talking about. Eventually, you just get kind of used to it. You might see, I mean, I've seen Carrot Top working out at the gym I used to go to. He'll come in there on a Tuesday afternoon at 2 o'clock and work out by himself. And by the way, that dude was still ripped, I mean, to the max the last time I saw him. He was totally yoked. But just things like, like, oh, he kind of brushed it off. This is from Jan on Twitter. Blackjack table at the Atlantis in Paradise Island, roped off for one player, dressed in a sweatsuit and wearing sunglasses, a Saturday night. And it was Michael Jordan, giant stack of chips in front of him. A lot of fun to witness. Sure, even though he's by himself. Talks about how he was playing Dennis Rodman. We had a craps table with Dennis Rodman one time in the 90s at the Mirage. Quite the weird dude. And then same trip, he's playing with Rodman. His all-time sighting at the craps table at the Luxor, right next to him, Heather Locklear. And then Richie Sambora was also next to him. He said, and Jan says, needless to say, I had no clue if I was winning or losing, but it was, I was totally frozen in time. Imagine that. You come to Vegas, who knows, maybe a big fight weekend, and suddenly you're playing craps with Dennis Rodman and Heather Locklear at the same table?
In his book, Phil Jackson referred to Dennis as mentally handicapped. He said if he didn't realize that, there was, I mean, you had to realize that to deal with Dennis Rodman, as he wrote in his book. And the thing with when Rodman came out here one time, he took the dice and he would rub it on the dealer's head and below the equator. And the guy sued him, and guy came after him, and Rodman had to pay him money. I mean, he did it right in front of everybody, too. So Rodman was a lunatic. This is from Andrew. I was 15. Went with a buddy of mine and his dad up to Cooperstown. Robin Yount, George Brett, Nolan Ryan were inducted. We hit the golf course on a Saturday with a bag of balls and Sharpies looking for autographs. We got them from Mike Schmidt, Ryan Sandberg, and Jim Palmer. Palmer, I'll never forget. We brought along with us a kid who was maybe 10, was an Orioles fan. We came over, he talked to us for a minute, he signed, and Johnny Bench was sitting in the golf cart. We asked Bench for an autograph. He mumbled something and looked the other way. Palmer yelled, "Johnny, sign the kid's ball," and tossed it to him. Bench signed the ball and tossed it back to Palmer. When my buddy looked, he noticed Bench, after signing the ball, took his thumb and ran it over the signature, smearing the signature. Palmer apologized and signed another ball for my friend. And he went back to, he went back to golfing. That's from AJ in Pennsylvania. I mean, is it that hard to sign? I mean, that's incredible if true. Another one from John. Rolex store at the Wynn was closed to the public, so Leonardo DiCaprio could shop solo. Yeah, Michael Jackson used to do it all the time too. Yeah.
Well, and as we're seeing, kind of like Jordan too, right? He had to have things shut down a little bit. Every time he walked out of his room.
Yeah, right.
3,000 people waiting for him at that point. We were covering a golf tournament up in Lake Tahoe, early 2000s, that celebrity golf tournament that's there every single year, which is a lot of fun. And the radio station, our booth was right next to Charles Barkley on the driving range. And I got real close to him because I was asking him to come over so we could sit down with us. And he was talking to somebody about the night before. He was gambling, playing blackjack at wherever it was in Tahoe. And the guy asked him if he did well. His response was, "I won about 300 last night," meaning 300,000, obviously. And he said, "If I won about two more, it would have been a good night." And at the time, I was just like, you know, again, I'm early 20s. And I hear that. I'm like, you won 300,000 playing blackjack, and you don't consider that a good night? Like, you needed to win an even five to call it a good night for you.
That was his goal. He said that in an interview. Yeah, it was one of his problems early on. He would try to win a million, so he wouldn't walk away if he was up like that. So if he said about five times he won a million and over 20 times he lost a million. So that's Barkley's story. Another tweet, guy sat by John Voight on a flight, and John Voight bought drinks for everybody on the plane. Said he was a nice guy. He's got a good resume. He's got a hell of a resume, John Voight.
I'd say underrated as an actor.
Yeah.
Pretty much good in anything that he does.
Another email too about
got a pencil.
Yeah, guys wondering about Five Guys. No drive-through, right? Does Five Guys have a drive-through? I don't think they do.
That's a good question.
Well, ask Matt
that
tomorrow.
Right on that.
A lot of people wanted Five Guys on the list as well, but if they don't have a drive-through, they're out. Not considered.
That's right. Another one. I think Habit. Have you ever had Habit Bar and Grill or whatever that's called? The Habit Hamburger. I've never been there.
No.
But that was a big response yesterday that I saw on Twitter, and people were like, I don't think they have a drive-thru, so you can't qualify with that one. It's Follow the Money here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. We'll get into the NHL's latest plan coming up with Dennis Bernstein in 15 minutes. This was the biggest show of all time, and it often featured gambling tones. We'll talk about it coming up. So now is the time to become a VSiN Plus subscriber. It's free. You won't have to decide what you want to do, pay or cancel, until at least one of the major sports returns. All you have to do is go to VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. Dennis Bernstein, NHL's latest plan coming up in about 15 minutes here on the program. Paul, what did you think of this email from Andrew, an attorney who lives in Miami Beach, 46 years old, I believe. He sent us, this is one of the lengthiest emails we've received so far on the show, and what a breakdown. Going over, he's like, look, we're in the pandemic, and I've been going over a lot of just like different gambling stuff in my head. He took the time to write down and break down like the five biggest Seinfeld episodes that actually mentioned or were like it was involving gambling during its run. And it was a tremendous job by him. But he's right, you know, when you stop and think about it, yeah, they actually did talk about gambling once in a while on that show.
Sure. Number one, the contest. I gave him a shout out last week. I said he was from Texas, but I'd like to have his life. An attorney in Miami Beach, Andrew. The contest, number one. One of the greatest Seinfeld episodes ever, entirely based upon a bet. The breakdown's great. Elaine has to lay 3-1, 3-2 odds to everyone in the group just to enter the contest, despite Kramer suggesting Elaine should have to put up 1,000 to everyone's 100 because she's a woman. George suggested 2-1 odds. And it's just the laughter from the audience when Kramer comes in, slaps the money down, and says, I'm out. I'm out. Yeah, I'm out of the contest.
Like 90 seconds. That'll do it. Okay. See you later.
We're just, so smart as well to do that risque topic. I mean, think about that time. I mean, you talk about, they never used the word, and then to have the whole episode about that topic was sensational by Larry and David and Jerry. The Susie, when Kramer's friend Mike becomes a bookie, Kramer tells Jerry, who tells Jerry he has a gambling problem, so he can't bet, but places a $100 bet for Jerry on the Knicks to win by 35 or more because they're going to the game against the Pacers, and then Reggie Miller gets in a fight and takes a swing, and he gets kicked out. And then that allows him to win the bet because then the Knicks kill him because Miller is kicked out of the game. And then Mike doesn't have enough money to pay Jerry.
Kramer calls it sweet action. Yeah. And the best line is, I didn't know Cheryl Miller had a younger brother or older brother.
Yes.
Whatever it is.
Yes.
Awesome.
That's
line.
A good one. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. That is good. Keep them coming. Put up number three. This Andrew put this together. The next one, please.
It's very rewatchable, too.
Have it.
You don't have it now? Okay. There we go. Kramer and this is like it happens today, right? You stuff your betting on with boredom. And him and his buddy Earl are gambling on what flight will arrive first. The TV monitor in the lounge that shows the flight time serves as the betting board. Not only are there plenty of double or nothing bets, but eventually Kramer gets accused of using inside information to win the final bet.
He's on the phone a couple of times. Not going to make it. Going to make it. Yeah.
God. Yeah. Yep.
Can I argue, by the way, that the contest would not be number one, although it was brilliant. And at the time, come on, it was probably number one, according to everybody. I think other episodes on Seinfeld are more rewatchable than the contest. It's kind of like, you know, we talked about the game recently, David Fincher film. It's so good. But the first time you saw it is way better than like every other time you saw it, because the ending just hits you out of nowhere and you're totally floored by the ending. Well, when you know it's coming the second and third time that you watch it, it's not as good. Come on. Use phony in a sentence. You don't feel that way? Okay.
That's good. It's like The Boyfriend. It's like the second spitter with Keith Hernandez, which is two parts. But I could watch that over and over again. It's just,
well,
I think that's
amazing.
The writing is off the charts. I mean, it's one thing. Costanza was great. Jason Alexander, Julia. But the writing is off the charts, and the stuff they would come up with, like the roommate switch, the whole conversation with Newman coming in and McDowell, and it's so good. I mean, are you jealous of him? Are you jealous of me? I mean, so it's just great stuff there. I can't believe how it went on and on and on for years. That's the thing. I mean, this was that's why I was thinking to myself, I'm like, this is my favorite show, like in year two or three. I'm not the only guy, only a small group of people I would talk to watched it. I'm like, this show is going to take off. How aren't more people watching it? And then finally, when they put it behind Cheers, the thing took off and it became the monster that we all know and love now.
I mean, if you go back and just run down the episodes and look like season three through, and I might have, but season three through like season six or seven, find me a weak episode. Like, again, I think I told the story where randomly during this whole pandemic nonsense, I put on Seinfeld. I'm going to start season five. I laughed out loud, and I've seen every episode of Seinfeld over and over and over again, right? I laughed out loud at every single episode starting season five, episode one. And it just, they kept getting better and better and better. And I looked at the list. I'm like, every single episode for like 4 years is just phenomenal. Talk about your peak, your prime, to have an A-plus game and deliver like whatever it was, 22 or 23 episodes every single year. I might be light on that. And to hit it out of the park is just incredible, too. Number four, they have The Strike.
Huh? Yep. Involves horse racing. And number five is one of my favorite episodes, is The Subway. Mm-hmm. While on the subway one day, Kramer overhears two guys discussing an upcoming horse race about a long shot with some inside information, and the it's going to be a sloppy track. The word lock is used in the episode. His mother was a mother. The great line that Kramer overhears, his father was a mother, his mother was a mother. And then Kramer goes to the OPB and wins a pile of cash betting on the horse. And that's when he's doing like the guy, the video we showed last week, where Kramer's slapping himself with the paper and the form. And then he wins, and the guy chases him down, and it turns out the blind guy, Costanza, the guy's not blind. Come on. He's an undercover cop, and he saves the day. That is a great episode. Jerry's talking to the naked guy about the Mets. We need more pitching. We need more hitting. Great episode. There he is. That's where he got it from. That's good.
Yeah, and by the way, here's the deal with how popular the show was, not only for us, like in our early 40s, but I think for younger people, like we have a buddy, Ed Graney, his daughter is now in college. She rewatched it in syndication with him. She loved Seinfeld when she was like 14 years old, and she's like 19 right now, whatever it is. So this like the whole demo expands over time because it's in reruns constantly, and it's evergreen material that everybody can relate to, and it's still funny to this day. I mean, his mutter was a mutter is something that whenever I talk about horse racing with certain people 25 years after the fact, it's still brought up like every single time.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Incredible. Thanks to Ryan, FTM at VSiN.com. Ryan Point. Yeah, Kramer threw a hot dog at Reggie Miller. I forgot about that. started the brawl, gets kicked out of the game, and the Knicks win by 35, and the big shot comes in, the long shot comes in.
Yeah. We'll talk about the NHL's latest plan involving 24 teams with Dennis Bernstein coming up next. Welcome back to the program. It is Follow the Money here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Mitch Moss along with Paulie Howard. And we are joined now by Dennis Bernstein, terrific NHL personality on the NHL. He joins us now. And Dennis, the4.com as well, where you write, you made a very astute comment with us, I don't know, probably 2 months ago, saying that NBC is basically dying for programming and content and how that's holding up today with the NHL possibly coming back. I thought that was a great observation when you probably made that with us back in March, pal.
Yeah, thanks, Mitch. Appreciate it. Look, when I see that Fox gets a 38% lift off of the Darlington race on Sunday, and I watched it for 3 hours, believe it or not, people are starving for content. It's as simple as that. I mean, you look at the NFL draft, UFC, it's important for the sport to come back on a couple different levels, and there'll be a home for it, regardless of where it is. Plus, it also factors into the negotiations for the next TV contract, to be honest with you. The contract's up with NBC. If they get huge numbers with NBC here because of what's going on in the world, it could help them with Fox and the others, ESPN, TNT. You know, the next contract, guys, are going to probably go to a multiple networks like the NBA has. So I think this is a very important time for the NHL, and I expect that, you know, here in the next 7 to 10 days, they'll make an announcement, and we'll get hockey sometime in the summer.
Late July, you think? Mid-July?
Yeah.
They could do this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
June will be reserved for bringing players back, having a little bit of a mini training camp, and then July, probably what's going to mirror if baseball gets their act together. You know, they want to come back on July 4th. I think early July, we're going to see it, and we'll probably play it until September.
What's the right number for cities with hub cities?
Two.
One, two, four? Two, you think?
Two, okay. And yours is one. I would be shocked if there's no if they don't play in Vegas, especially after Orlando. You know, the NBA went to Orlando. There's no reason not to. You've got the Orleans, you've got T-Mobile, you've got as many hotels as you need. It just makes too much sense. There is, you know, a NHL ready arena in the city, so it just makes a lot of sense, guys. So I expect that hopefully, and at some point, hopefully, I'll see you guys when I let media back in the buildings, or at least set up a media, you know, headquarters for this. Maybe not to the later rounds. But I would be really surprised at this point if it's not Vegas and one more city.
Well, I mean, that's why. Go ahead, Paul.
No, I'm sorry. You said September. Couldn't they knock this out? Aren't they going to go best of five? Or would that change?
Yeah, they could. But I think that if you start in July and August, right? So that's 2 months right there. If you start middle of July, you go in 2 months. That takes you to September. So the first round could be best three of five. But then you want some rest for these guys, too. So, and there's no rush, Paul. Here's the deal. Yeah. When the season ends, there's going to be a 50-day hiatus between this season and next. And I've always said there's no issue with me pushing the season start back to November or December, because look at all the rush of sports that is going to come back at this point. You're going to have the NFL, Major League Baseball probably be in the playoffs, NBA. It makes too much sense.
Right.
You know, look, I'll give you a team, Tampa Bay. You think Tampa Bay really wants to play hockey in September and October with what's going to go down with the Buccaneers there? Do you think they'll get any play at all? No, even if they win the cup. So I think it's a really smart move. So they can play into September. I think there's no rush to finish the season, so they could space it out a little bit more to give these guys a little bit more rest. Then I would do that.
What do you think of the 24-team format with the playoffs and the top four from each conference get a bye, and then we have the play-in round? What do you think of that?
No problem with it, Paulie. Look, this is different times. No problem with it at all. I think it's unique. I think it's exciting. The one thing I don't think is that the resistance from the GMs to do anything different would be really, really, is a shock to me, to be honest with you. But I look, The four top teams should be rewarded. And I know for the people that complain that, you know, the 5-12, like the example is Montreal, you know, playing, let's say, I don't know, the 5 seed, you know, and Carey Price gets hot. So what? Like, you know, it's best 2 out of 3. Win the games. And if you don't like your seed, you should have won more games during the regular season. You know, this season is not it's not like some people think it would be a tarnished or not earned Stanley Cup if they win. Absolutely, positively not true. Like, you still don't have to win. You have to might have to win more games to get in. So I don't think that's the case. I like it. I think it's the best thing you can do, because the reason they're doing it is because they didn't land on the same number of teams for every game, for every team.
That's right.
So some teams had 68, some 67. Look, here's the deal. Tim Kurchin had a great line. We are going to land on the best of a bad idea, right? That's what's going to happen. So for people that say they don't want to watch it or they should go, then don't watch it. But I can't believe that a hockey fan who hasn't had hockey for 2 to 3 months, when we get to a point where we're playing, that we're not going to watch, they're not going to watch the games. I think the viewership will be great.
I think it's a great idea. So when the 5's playing in the 12 and the 6 playing in the 11 and the 7 playing in the 10, what are the top 4 teams doing that are on byes? Are they playing each other?
Paul, that's the one point I don't get. They're supposedly playing each other, which I get it because you don't want to penalize the teams. But if you had these teams playing 3 games in 5 nights, like, or, you know, that would hurt those teams. I mean, plus there's the injury factor. Maybe I want to rest my team, scout the other 2 teams I might be playing. If I'm the 1 seed, you know who you're going to be playing. You know, the 8-9 is going to play the 1, right? So they could do that. I get it. I understand that you want some games under your belt. I guess that's the only equitable way to do it. But again, it's not perfect. Like, if you want perfection as a sports fan, forget it. It's out the window. Like, this is the best situation. And again, it's the top 4 teams. They don't want to sit idle for another week. I get it. I understand it. I'm not sure it's the best thing, but if that's what they come with and people agree, then I'm all for it.
Okay, so then what happens if Las Vegas is a major hub and there are a ton of these teams playing and they're all staying within, I don't know, those 4 or 5 hotels that are right around T-Mobile Arena? That's why it makes so much sense. But what if 1 or 2 players come down with COVID-19? Is it going to be like the NBA back in March where they said, shut it down, Rudy Gobert has it, so that means the entire league's going to stop right now? Or is it going to be like the UFC? 1 fighter has it, so his fight is off. We're going to continue with the card.
I love Dana White. I think he's done all the right things here. And Bill Daly, you know, deputy commissioner, has been on record as saying, Mitch, like, one or even multiple cases of COVID-19 being positive would not stop this from happening. Like, if it went through teams, like, you know, guys, look, I don't want to equate this to the flu, but players get sick during the season. And what you would do is you would segregate them and, whoever they touch, you do contact tracing, you take them out. And look, there have been cases of COVID-19 in the NHL this season. You know, 5 Ottawa Senators, 3 Colorado Avalanche got it. They had mild cases, like 99% of the people do, and they got better. It's as simple as that. So you'd have to quarantine them for 7 to 10 days, you know, depending on the team who it is. If it's a Boston or a favorite, you know, if it's Brad Marchand, that's going to hurt the team. But, you know, there's nothing you could do about it. You know, we can't disinfect the entire world here. Like, there is risk involved. But there's risk when you walk out your door every day. Right. No matter what, even, you know, a car accident, whatever. So, Mitch, I don't think that would stop it. It would have to be very pervasive. And again, these are healthy 25, 27, 29 year old, men playing this game. So I don't anticipate that issue. You'll have enough testing. You'll take temperatures of players. You can do mass testing. You know, there's a test where you could do it. You could sample like 100 players. They could one day randomly, they spit in the tube. You test them, everybody's negative, but keep playing, right? So you don't have to test every single player. That's what they do in big factories and things of that nature. You don't have to test every player before every game. There's precautions. I'm sure they err on the side of caution, but I expect that they could do this right. If other businesses can go back to work, you're talking about specialized players, 700 players, 350 at a location. I don't see a reason why they can't do it, and I don't think that 1 or 2 infections of COVID-19 would stop the season.
And a lot of locker rooms too. That's a good thing about they have so many locker rooms.
Yeah, and they're going to do that. Right. Yeah, they have the resources to do that, Paulie.
Yes. Hopefully it does. The ideal situation is 3 games. 3 games a day. How many games can you play in the same rink a day?
I think you could play 3. You could probably do like 1 local time, 1 p.m., 4 p.m., 7 p.m. without you know, they do it in the Olympics, Paul, all the time, right? You play
I mean,
if you watch the Olympics and the way to do the Olympics, like, and nobody's at those games, right? And nobody's going to be at those games. So you have to worry about crowd control or attendance or whatever. This is a televised event they're doing. So 1-4-7, you knock it out and you can do it. And then you can get to a point, and it's past, if we get past the first round, and if you reseed these teams, then there'll be some normalcy with respect to playing. Look, you have to make amends. They also have to make up for revenue for some of the regular season games they missed. So this is one way to do it. So I like the idea. It's novel. It's given the circumstances. I think it's the least inequitable option that we have to go forward at this point in time.
Dennis, we have less than 2 minutes here. I told Paulie the other day, it's like, I could barely remember who was playing well before this happened more than 2 months ago now. Like, it felt like the Wild were making a push in the Western Conference. And, like, dare I say, like, the poor Flyers, they were coming on. They may have won that division.
That's the one team, Paul, that really hurt. And Boston separated between them and Tampa. But I think Philly really took a hit. Now, could they come back and do it? Yeah, and the Rangers were playing very well. And the Rangers could be really dangerous with Zibanejad scoring 40 goals this season. So there are teams there. And plus, the thing is, coming out of the box, like, it's like, you know, baseball. Pitching's probably ahead of hitting. So I think defense might be in front of the offense. So the better defensive teams, like Columbus and the Islanders and Winnipeg with Connor Hellebuck, you might want to watch out for those teams in the first round pulling upsets, because I don't think the offense and the flow of the game will be as great in the first round as it will be in others.
I think you're spot on. You can follow him on Twitter. Yep. He is at Dennis TFP. Read him at thefourthperiod.com. You are the best on the sport. Thanks so much for the time today, Dennis.
Mr. Poli, it was a pleasure being on VSiN with you guys.
Yep. Thanks, Dennis.
Take care.
Thanks for getting up early as well. I would go best of three in those play-in series. I'd go best of three with the 5-12, the 6-11, the 7-10, the 8-9. And then you can go to best of five, everyone you ever do that. But I love the idea of going from 16 to 24 teams.
I mean, what is it going to look like potentially here? Like, let's say if this all happens and we get the NHL and the NBA and golf while football is starting and we have pro football and we have college football as well. I mean, what August and September could look like if they're going to play until then. Anyway, we are back tomorrow. Human's going to join the program again. Have a good night.